I'll never get over how TV shows make court cases look so succinct. I mean, we all know it isn't true. CSI wraps up an investigation in an hour, and we know that's absurd. And it's okay because it's just television. If a show chronicled the process realistically, we'd be watching for weeks on end. I mean, more even. Months. Years. No one has time for that. It would be ridiculous. Of course, in real life, these cases do take weeks and months and years, and the people involved feel like they don't have time for it either. They've got lives they want to live. We only get one of those, after all. And yet, once you're enmeshed in the legal system, there's no shortcut, no editing process that makes it more manageable. For people accused of heinous crimes, it becomes their lives, years of their lives, decades sometimes, even if they're innocent. A lot of people don't think Elwood Jones is innocent, but a lot of people do. As it stands right now, he is not convicted of the murder with which he's been accused. Jones's case began in September 1994 when Rhoda Nathan, a beloved New Jersey woman, died in the Ohio hotel where Jones worked. That's 30 years ago now. 30 and change. For most of those three intervening decades, Jones was in prison on death row. I know this story well because I told Elwood's story in depth throughout a full season of a podcast called Accused. I intended to update Elwood's story in that podcast feed, but the company I worked for when I created that show defunded the work I was doing. Journalism's kind of in a crisis state, after all. And kept ownership of the podcast when I quit over it, so I'm here, starting anew. If you found this new feed and don't yet know Elwood's story, it might feel like we're starting a tale mid-sentence, but even if you did listen to that whole season of Accused, chances are you could use a reminder on a few things, so let's start there. Jones, then 42 years old, worked at the Embassy Suites Hotel in 1994 and was there the morning Nathan was killed in her hotel room. Rhoda, age 67, had been in town for her best friend's grandson's bar mitzvah. She and the best friend, Elaine Shube, shared a hotel room with Shube's partner. Well, boyfriend, but that always sounds weird to say in the context of an elderly couple. Rhoda and Elaine shared the suite's main bed while Shube's partner, Joe Kaplan, slept on a pull-out couch in the living room portion of the suite. The morning of September 3, 1994, Joe and Elaine had gone to breakfast, while Rhoda stayed in the hotel room. She took a shower and apparently interrupted someone robbing the room when she stepped out of the bathroom, wearing only a towel. When Elaine and Joe returned to the room, they had Elaine's daughter and grandson in tow. The quartet opened the door to the hotel room and discovered Rhoda beaten and bruised and barely breathing on the floor. Medics would fight to save her to no avail. Shube's daughter, Cynthia Kirsch, told me her son, only 6 years old at the time, was forever traumatized by the experience. In fairness, so were Cynthia and her mother. Elaine let out a blood-curdling scream at the sight of her best friend, and that scream seemed to bifurcate her life. She was never the same afterward. Police and prosecutors zeroed in on Elwood Jones as the killer because he sustained a hand wound the same day Rhoda died. He had a nasty infection in his dominant hand that law enforcement theorized came from punching Rhoda in the mouth. This evidence sounded so convincing that Forensic Files did an episode on Elwood's conviction, touting it as a win for forensic science.
An alert doctor noticed a horrible infection on the finger of a hotel worker who had come to the emergency room for treatment of his injury. The virulence of that infection was a clue to the mystery.
It sounds pretty good, right? At trial, the prosecution presented a hand surgeon, John McDonough, who said the few times he had ever seen infections like Elwood's was when he treated so-called fight bite injuries. In short, the expert said that a specific bacteria, Eichenella corydens, is mostly found in people's mouths, and when someone punches another person in the mouth so hard that a tooth cuts the puncher's hand, it can cause a gnarly infection teeming with that bacteria. McDonough said he was certain Elwood's infection could only have come from punching someone in the mouth. Elwood, meanwhile, said he didn't punch anyone, that he cut himself falling on metal steps leading to a dumpster. Police's response? Yeah, likely story. Fast forward to 2022, and Elwood's pro bono lawyers presented an expert in microbiology who said McDonough's original trial testimony was inaccurate. Dr. Stephen Burdett said he had seen Eikenella choroidans, quote, literally from the foot all the way up to the brain, end quote. McDonough wasn't able to testify at that August 2022 hearing because he died in 2019. The University of Cincinnati College of Medicine has named its foyer after him. That same hearing also laid out details about how prosecutors failed to turn over nearly 4,000 pages of investigatory documents to Jones's original defense team. It all worked together to convince Hamilton County Municipal Judge Wendy Cross that justice had not been served in the case. 4 months later, Cross ordered a new trial and, about a month after that, released Jones from prison to await it. Jones walked out of prison with a smile on his face on January 14th, 2023. The system had taken an awfully long time to work, but work it had. At least in Elwood's view, prosecutors thought otherwise. They said the judge had overreached, releasing a heartless killer back into society. Prosecutor Joe Dieters even took the unusual step of producing a slick video about it. It actually came out before Cross even made a ruling, leading some to speculate he was trying to sway her decision.
We don't need some murderous bastard like Elwood Jones walking around our community. I mean, anybody do this to an old lady, he'd kill your mom. He'd kill anybody's mom.
Judge Cross didn't see things that way, and despite prosecutors' attempts to make her reconsider her decision, she's stood firm. So prosecutors have appealed to other courts on a variety of issues, and one of those issues finally reached the state's highest court, the Ohio Supreme Court.
In our final case today, 2023-0772, in the matter of the state of Ohio versus Elwood Jones.
That was February 13th of this year, 2025. It's been 30 years since Rhoda died, 27 years since Elwood was convicted, and 6 years since I first started reporting on his case. The last time I updated podcast listeners on his status, in any feed, was 2 years ago. Some stuff has happened since then, and some more stuff is expected to happen very soon. Welcome to What If They're Wrong? After the accusation. When I last talked about the case against Elwood Jones, he was out of prison and Joe Dieters was out of Hamilton County. Well, Dieters still lives here, as far as I know, but he doesn't work here anymore. He works for the Ohio Supreme Court. He was appointed to fill a vacancy that wasn't set to expire until 2026. He could have run for re-election to that seat when it expired, but instead, he opted to run in 2024 against a Democrat seeking re-election. So, a fellow justice, a colleague of his on the bench. It was a strategic move to solidify GOP power in the state, and it worked. There's now one Democrat left on the 7-seat Ohio Supreme Court. You might be cringing at me talking politics in a true crime podcast, but here's the thing about that. There's no avoiding politics. Prosecutors, after all, are elected officials, and everything's political. That's as true everywhere as it is in Hamilton County, where Dieters had been succeeded in his post as top prosecutor by one of his protégés, a woman named Melissa Powers. She tried to keep her appointed seat in 2024, but but she was ousted by a Democrat named Connie Pillage. This was a big deal in Hamilton County, as Local 12 reported.
And it's important to know that for the first time in 92 years in Hamilton County, a Democrat has won that prosecutor's position. Reporting live, Annie Brown, Local 12 News.
92 years. Even in political strongholds, that's a mighty long time without interruption. Now, if you're not from Ohio, you probably think of the whole state as a Republican stronghold, but that's not actually true. The big cities, Columbus, Cleveland, Cincinnati, lean blue, like a lot of metropolitan areas in this country. The outcome of 2024's election made it clear that Hamilton County has, in recent years, become super-duper blue. There's just one elected Republican official in a non-judicial post left here, and that's the county engineer, who basically has no opposition. But for years, even while the rest of the county was mostly blue, the prosecutor's office stayed firmly red, with Joe Dieters helming it for about a quarter century, from 1992 to 1999, and again from 2005 to 2023. Even when he took that six-year hiatus, the post still went to a Republican. Part of that is because a lot of people feel Republicans are tougher on crime and criminals. NBC News did a poll on this in 2023 that showed 46% of Americans think Republicans are better at dealing with crime. Just 20% said Democrats are. Now, Pillage was a change candidate. She campaigned on the idea that Melissa Powers, a Republican hired by Dieters, would be more of the same. Pillage's platform was reform. Every time I wrote a story for the Cincinnati Inquirer, even remotely critical of the prosecutor's office, Pillage's campaign emailed it out, looking to drum up votes. And in all transparency, I wrote a few such stories. In 2024, my colleague Dan Horn and I uncovered some shadiness in past prosecutions that we published in a series of investigations. You'll hear more about those cases later, as in next season. But for now, what's important to know is that in Hamilton County, with the ousting of Powers, there was a changing of the guard, and Elwood Jones and his lawyers were here for it. I asked Jones about it last November, just after the election.
Were you paying attention to the prosecutor's race?
No, not really closely. At the end, I looked and I went to sleep, to be honest. I was hoping that she'd win. And when I woke up, I had a text from Dave Jones Elwood, Connie Phelps won.
The Dave he's referring to is lawyer David Hine. Of course, Elwood wanted Pillage to win. Melissa Powers had been parroting what her predecessor, Joe Dieters, had said about him, that he was a killer who would kill again, that the judge who overturned the verdict was a zealot. Powers made it clear she had no interest in re-examining Jones's case on the merits and continued to send the same assistant prosecutors after him, insisting that he should be sent back to death row or at least retried for murder. So, yeah, it's no surprise Elwood favored the newcomer over the person who was actively trying to reconvict him. That's a no-brainer. But that didn't mean he trusted Pillage would re-examine his case either. It just meant he hoped she would, and there was a higher probability that she would than Powers would, because Powers' probability was at zero. That hasn't happened, though. After the election, Elwood's lawyers, Jay Clark and David Hine, hoped they would get a meeting with Pillage. Here's Hine explaining.
So a number of people have reached out on Elwood's behalf. We reached out directly and she reached out and said, I'd love to talk to you. Let's pick a time.
It was a noisy room, so if you couldn't hear him, he said she was supposed to reach back out with her schedule so they could set up a meeting. That hasn't happened yet. What has happened is that Hine and Clark appeared before the Supreme Court, the same Supreme Court on which Dieters now sits, to argue on Elwood's behalf.
I would like to thank Judge Tucker of the Second District Court of Appeals for agreeing to sit today for Justice Dieters. Judge, thank you for being here.
The oral arguments at the Ohio Supreme Court building in Columbus took place 6 days after my last day as a Cincinnati Inquirer reporter, where I'd worked for 10 years. In all that time, much of it spent covering criminal cases, I'd never been to this building. I'd covered Obergefell, that's the landmark same-sex marriage case at the U.S. Supreme Court back in 2014, but nothing here at the state level. Let me set the scene, because the courtroom was, is, unbelievable. It's stately. Murals cover the ceiling. Damask tapestries drape the walls. Everywhere you look is walnut and marble. The room has a theme, and that theme is history. The ceiling is divided into five sections, each representing a state carved from the Northwest Territory. The bench itself features carvings that represent, and I'm quoting from the court's website here, significant developments or elements of Ohio law. In Latin, beneath the clock is the phrase, "While I speak, time flies." That feels so surreal in this room, where it feels like time stands still. Which brings me back to Elwood, for whom time is standing still.